Well, congratulations. I noticed that The Outsiders is on the paperback bestseller list. At the same time, you have a brand new hardcover coming out.
You know, the Outsiders is the surprise of my life. Did we talk about that last time?
Yes, we did. That was the occasion of your coming in the last time.
Yeah, I didn't expect it to sell. And nobody did. My publisher didn't. He pushed it through out of the goodness of his heart. But it's taken off. 1 million copies in paper already. And it did probably better than anything except The Immigrants and Outcover. So,
well, it must be exciting to have two books out at the same time, hardcover coming out, same time the paperback version comes out. It must be a very good feeling.
I'm trying to think of whether it is still exciting, so I could give you an honest answer. You know, when my wife and I were kids and we never had a nickel in the world, we knew Max Weber. And he once said to me, look at me, Helen, I'm 73 years old, I'm sick, I'm beyond anything. And they come to me and want to give me $300,000 for my paintings. He said, when I was young, they wouldn't give me 3 cents for one. That's not exactly my condition, of course, but I'm a little excited.
Well, I can't.
I'm pleased.
Yeah, I can't imagine anybody getting blasé about a creation of his or hers and seeing it in print. And I just can't imagine you're taking it with a grain of salt.
I have a very good publisher, the best publisher I've ever had, and I've been right through the whole gamut of publishers, and they attend to everything so well. Nothing to scream about, nothing to complain about. I just get the book when it's all done. I look at it and I say to myself, well, it's awfully nice.
Well, you are an exception, I can tell you that. Like, I have heard nothing but complaints from writers about the hand that feeds them, in effect.
Mm-hmm.
But they do it all the time. Well, the last time you were here, we talked about The Outsiders, but we also focused on some of the highlights of your long literary career. But today I thought we would focus primarily on the five-part story of the Levitt family, and to bring us up to date with the, as the publisher says, the triumphant conclusion of the Levitt saga. The first in the series came out in 1977. That was The Immigrants. I'd like to know, when you started this mammoth project, or it turned out to be a mammoth project, if you had envisioned it being as big and as encyclopedic as it turned out to be.
I'm not sure at this point. I started it, strangely enough, I started the outline in 1973. One of the studios thought that this would be a good idea for a show. And I began to outline a show, and then they thought it was a bad idea for a show. And I went on and completed the outline and put it away. I took it out again, 1976, I guess it was. And I got the notion of telling the history of California in the past 50 years, the history of our country, in terms of, well, firstly, I thought in terms of Dan Levitt. But then, when it began to shape up with Dan Levitt, his wife and his daughter, I became fascinated with the daughter, and I said to myself, why don't I tell the story of the daughter right through her life up to today? Today was that. Today was 1976. I said to myself, it can be the longest study of a woman ever printed, and it'll be a lot of fun. Now, when I asked my agent, my publisher, about that, they said, what will you need in the way of pages? And I thought, at least 2,000 pages, and everyone balked. They couldn't sell it, have to price it too high and all that. So I cut off The Immigrants, which just begins Barbara. I wrote the second book, and I thought I would progress further. But as you see, I didn't. I wrote the third book, And I said, there it is, a trilogy. Maybe we'll leave it there. And this and that happened, and I wrote the fourth book. Then I said, that's it, I can't. It's become too huge. I'm dealing with over 1,000 characters. I can't go on with this. And I wrote two other novels, Max and The Outsider. And then the pressure of my publishers, the pressure of my daughter, who is most intimately involved in this and says, you cannot do it, you cannot leave Barbara there. My wife, who says she's still a young woman in her 50s, I said, what the hell, I'll give it a shot. And I took her from there to 68 years. Now, that's as far, and that's a, that was a problem. That was an enormous problem. Who writes a novel these days about a woman of 60 to 68 who is a positive heroine and a wonderful woman? It's very unusual.
So when you started writing this gigantic saga, mm-hmm. you had in mind essentially what turned out to be two books, The Immigrants and then Second Generation.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't as though you had sat yourself down to plan a five-part novelization of this family.
No, that evolved. When I finished the second one, I decided to do the third one because I couldn't leave it. That picked up the second one. When I finished the third one, I was not sure, but then I came around to doing the fourth one. When I did four of them, I thought, there it was. So what you say is absolutely so. I didn't envisage the whole thing in that. I thought maybe I could cover her whole life in a couple of books.
Well, Second Generation leaves off approximately 1945.
46.
46.
Yeah.
But certainly there were enough events in the world for you to proceed, and so it was logical that you do so. And it's interesting the way you have interwoven the lives of this family, especially Barbara, through all of the political upheavals during the 30s, the longshore strike and the Spanish Civil War, and then her mission to Germany and all of this. You weave all of the personal aspects of the lives of Barbara and her family with some of the major political events of the world. That really wasn't a question, but it was more of an observation than anything else. But obviously you had, in writing the story, you had to be attuned to what went on in the recent historical aspect.
I lived through it all. I found it very difficult to write about what I have not experienced. Very difficult to write about it with any validity. I think it came off with World War One. But I had read so much and spoken so much to veterans of World War One that I felt I had a feeling of it. Now, I wanted very much, or at least I thought of sending Barbara to Congress instead of having her lose the election.
But she made two good shots.
I went down there and I spent 3 weeks hanging around that dismal, horrible place. I never have a good reaction to either our capital or our government. And I said to myself, there is no way I can get the whole sense of this place. I'll never get it. Especially in terms of a woman. I couldn't get any answers. I said, well, what bathroom does she use? This was not set up for women. It's a very hard question to get answered. I can't tell you the complexity of that. It's like a religious, it's like a priesthood with a huge body of priestly literature and dogma and everything else. So I said, no, I give up. Barbara will lose the election.
So you just didn't want to tackle Capitol Hill. That was the only reason that you didn't put Barbara in the,
yes,
in Congress?
Well, that, and by then I'd become, you know, Barbara was very real to me. Do I want to break her heart? You know, I had many long conversations with Fenwick, Millicent Fenwick.
Mm-hmm.
Marvelous woman. And listening to her and thinking of this good woman in this nest of thieves, there were many reasons Now, you know, I was once foolish enough in my youth to run for Congress, 1952. I ran for Congress under the designation of the old defunct American Labor Party. And I got carried away with this notion that all one needed was integrity to win win an election. All one needed was to present, against the illusions, positive arguments, to present a little truth against the lies. No, indeed. Didn't make a damn bit of difference.
That's like a faithful employee somewhere spends his life working for a company and expects to be rewarded for the rest of his life by this big company, and it doesn't always happen that way.
No, no. The morning of election, you know, you go around to the booths, look in, I don't know for what reason, see how the people are voting. This was in the East Bronx, which was quite different then in 52 than it is today.
What congressional district was that?
The 22nd, I think, or the 21st. That's a long time ago. I think it was the 21st. And we go into this booth, into the polling place, and this fat, motherly Jewish woman comes out of one of the voting booths. She sees me. She says, "Oh, Howard Fest, what a joy to meet you." Gives me a great big hug, enormous hug. I said, "Thank you, my dear, thank you. Did you vote for me?" She said, "I'm a Democrat. How could I vote for you?" There you are. What do you say to that?
Well, she probably didn't want to, in effect, waste her vote. So you can vote for principle, but principle doesn't win the election. So sometimes you have to throw your vote to someone you wouldn't normally do so, just to have a reasonable candidate in there. Otherwise, you lose it. If you vote your principles and your morals, you might not have anybody you want in there.
Well, that's why I voted for Mondale. Heaven help me.
Well, I was... I still have hope that Barbara Levitt will pull a romantic log out of the fire in terms of the... I can't remember his name, but the Republican candidate who, on the eve of the election...
Did you read the whole book?
Yes.
There's no room for him.
But they were so close, and they were writing the letters and everything, and I think toward the end of the book she calls him on the phone and laughs, and so this seemed to me a good match, even though that was an underhanded thing for him to have done in the book. But you do have the potential for going on to a sixth book in the Levitt saga.
No, I don't think so. She has a column to write, and she can learn to knit and bake, and she's got a good man. It's true she can't marry him, but I think she's got a good life.
I see a lot of similarities between you and Barbara Levitt. You, of course, are a writer. She is a writer. You were a correspondent. She was a correspondent. You ran against the House Committee on Un-American Activities, so did she. You spent time in jail, so did she. So I think that Barbara is almost a mirror image, in some respects, at least politically, of yourself. Is that accurate?
Well, that's what people accuse me of. I don't know. I think conceivably in politics, but... certainly not in her emotions, in her use of her emotions, in her relationship with men. I think she is a fairly complete woman. And I don't think any man is quite like a woman. We're a lot closer than we pretend to be, but... I think there's some truth in it. There's also no truth. I've known so many Barbara Levitts. Maybe not entirely, but I have. I've known a great many people very much like Barbara. So, I wouldn't know.
Did you have, when you created the Levitt family, did you have a real family in mind from which you drew?
No.
They were of unusual extraction, French, French-Italian, I think the... Joseph Levet was of French and Italian extraction, right?
See, I wanted to get the fishermen in there because I've always been absolutely fascinated with the San Francisco fishermen. In San Francisco, you're a lot closer to the fishermen than you are here. And here, who goes out to, where is it, I don't even know where the boats go out. No, up in the Sound where they go out, but it's a distant thing. In San Francisco, it's very intimate. I also wanted the contrast between the poverty and the wealth. You know, I used to say that if a committee of writers were to create a city to write novels about, they would create San Francisco. It's the ideal city to use as a background for a novel. And having decided to do that, I brought together components of San Francisco. The autocracy of wealth in San Francisco is so new and so close to poverty. You know, you may think Park Avenue is pretty close to Harlem, but there it's even closer. The hill bends down, and there's North Beach. There's all the other poor places. And also the creation of San Francisco is absolutely fascinating. It is not like an eastern city founded by the WASPs. It has none of the New England tradition behind it. This was a city created by the Irish, Jews, and Italians, and created almost in our time. And this gives it a simply marvelous character. It's a very neat city. It has only 800,000 people. It's a nice city to work with, if you're right.
You've never lived there, have you?
Not for more than a few months at a time.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we lived in Los Angeles for many years. Because the one thing I don't like about... Well, there are two things that would prevent me from living in San Francisco. It's not a good walking city because of the hills, and it's a cold city. It's an illusion that this is a warm place. It's a very cold place, and I hate cold weather.
You go to Connecticut on a regular basis.
Yes, well...
It's pretty cold up there.
I did not voluntarily leave California. My wife left, and I simply went with her. She said one day, I'm not going to die here. This is not a place for civilized people to die. It's a very interesting observation.
What is the chance of having a uniformed series, uniformed paperback series of the Levet saga?
Well, they put together? Three. They put four together
four?
In a book. And perhaps they'll put five together. I would like the publisher to bring them out in what they call quality paperback. But whether they will or not, I don't know.
Well, I'll bet you that there's going to be an addition to the series. I think that after time goes on, there will be enough new events to warrant it in terms of having Barbara involved. And indeed... In The Immigrant's Daughter, she goes to El Salvador. And so there's always something happening. We just don't stop the march of time.
What about age? Thing is, you're a young fella. You get to my age, and suddenly your body gets nasty with you. You can't do the things you want to do. Start saying, well, what was his name? Met him 3 days ago. Can't remember his name. You know, one thing and another. The legs hurt. All these things come on. Can I write a viable, exciting, delightful book about a woman of 70? I don't know. Might be an interesting project, but I don't think I'm going to pick it up.
Well, I'm not sure you're ready to put the Levets aside at this point. They have been very good to you, certainly.
Have you enjoyed them?
I have indeed. Are you working on anything else at the moment, or are you taking a break?
I have a play that is supposed to open in about 6 weeks, 7 weeks. 8 weeks. Whether it will or not, this is in the lap of the peculiar gods who reign over Broadway, where nothing is real and everything is a lovely illusion. That's a play I wrote about Tom Paine 45 years after I wrote the book about Tom Paine. And we tried it out in Massachusetts at Williamstown. It did very well there. It was very warmly greeted. Richard Thomas played the lead. And I'm hoping it will go on and open on Broadway.
Oh, that sounds very exciting. Have you done plays before?
Yes, but never on Broadway. I have a play which I did in Dallas and in Los Angeles and in the Summer Theater at New Hope, Pennsylvania. Another play which I did years ago off Broadway. Third play that was done half the countries on earth, but it was never done here. I've written 5 altogether. So 5 or 6.
Say, I should ask you how Evie Cunningham's detective is coming along. What's he been up to lately?
Yes, Masaya Masuda. For that, your listeners would have to know that in my disguises, I'm Evie Cunningham, who writes detective stories about a Zen Buddhist detective in Beverly Hills. He may appear in the networks, on the network, maybe. I did a pilot for ABC. Now, whether they will do it, I don't know. I never dare think, hope, or presume about the networks. I don't understand why they operate, how they operate, or even whether they take stupid pills day in and day out, but how they maintain the incredibly low level of production, this I don't understand. So maybe if I'm lucky, they will do this, but who knows?
Well, without meaning to bite the hand that has fed me for about 20 years, fortunately, I've been freed from the networks by getting a videotape recorder. And so I now control my own network, and I don't have to rely on ABC, NBC, or CBS in terms of my viewing.
I must put in an apology. I saw Izzy and Mo last night. Did you see it?
It was on. I had my earphones on, and I was working at my desk, and someone else in the house was watching it, but I did not, but I knew it was there. It looked kind of silly to me.
It was silly, but these two men are the two most delightful men who ever stepped onto a screen. Just a joy to watch. It was totally silly, but it was funny. It was sweet. You know, not a shade of anger or violence in the whole thing. Which is interesting when you consider the subject of two prohibition agents.
Well, Howard Fast, I appreciate your coming in and spending the last 30 minutes and focusing this time on the Levette saga, and I wish you well, and I think that I can speak on behalf of all of your many fans that it may not end, and we may well look forward to seeing another one. Time will tell. And you never can tell. You know, people who get older don't seem as old these days. It may be because our health is better and our medicines are better, and so you never can tell what a 70-odd-year-old woman will be doing next year.
Well, you know, I look forward to rereading those 5 books. That's going to take me a long time.
No, you told me the last time you were here you never reread your stuff.
Well, I think with these I ought to. Just to keep abreast of the complexity of it, the characters, and all the rest of it.
It is complicated in some respects. I had trouble remembering putting all the characters together. Fortunately, you have a family tree, but my mother sent me a copy of my family's family tree, and I couldn't read that one either. I could never figure that out. Yeah. I tell you what throws me, it's the line in which people get married, and I never learned to read these family trees well.
Well, what we need there is a little essay on how to read a family tree. And then the family tree.
That's another book. Howard Fast, thank you very much.
Thank you.